This programme was funded with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Hello, my name is Tom Brady and welcome to the series Living with the Border. Where people live in relation to the border means being subject to a different set of state laws and regulations, systems of education, taxation and state benefits. As with most political borders, there is no continuous barrier along the Irish border stopping people from passing from one jurisdiction to another. People have always been able to cross the border, where it runs through fields, forest areas or open country. Many of the features of the border that shaped people's lives from the early 1920s to the mid-1990s have now disappeared. Regulations on car travel through the system of bonds and stamp passes were abandoned in the 1960s. The movement of goods across the border was no longer regulated through the customs system following the creation of the open market in the European Union in 1992. Closed border roads were reopened and military checkpoints were removed quickly following the parliamentary ceasefire of the mid-90s. The border reshaped political and social realities across the entire island. For those who lived in close quarters with the border, partition was also a personal occurrence and implicated on everyday life. Mundane activities such as shopping, visiting families, travelling to church, farming, with some farms straddling the border, were often complicated by customs restrictions, checkpoints and cratered roads.
I had the pleasure of meeting Tom when he took part in a radio course with 9 other local people run by Dundalk FM and community radio stations in Ireland in 2016, and it was funded by the Community Foundation for Ireland. At the time, Tom talked about the idea of recording border stories, and this is the result, a series of 8 half-hour programmes entitled Living with the Border. Tom worked with Dundalk FM volunteer Alan Bogan to record and edit the interviews. In this, the final part of the series, Tom recalls his own memories of border living. As a young sergeant in Longford, he was unexpectedly stationed in Hackball's Cross as a result of the escalating tension along the border following the events of Bloody Sunday in Derry in January 1972. He has extensive knowledge of the County Louth border and tells me the names of the border crossings. He talks about the attack on the Dundalk Guard Station, the 1975 Loyalist bombing in Crow Street, Dundalk, riots in Dundalk and in Oriel Park in 1979 when Dundalk fans clashed with Linfield fans who were marching from the car park at the Harp Lager Brewery waving Union Jacks. He tells us about the 1984 extradition of Dominic McGlinchey, INLA, who was handed over to the RUC officers on the borderline. In 1986, Peter Robinson was charged in the Dundalk courthouse and a riot took place on Clanbrassil Street. Tom sat in court next to Peter Robinson and Ian Paisley when they appeared in Dundalk. In March 1998, the bodies of provisional IRA members shot dead by the SAS in Gibraltar were brought through the town on the way to Belfast, a month prior to the signing of the Good Friday Agreement. I started by asking Tom if he could remember the first few days when he arrived up in Hackball's Cross.
Well, I arrived up from Longford in March of 1973. I was after getting promoted sergeant, and I thought I'd get a station maybe local, but I didn't. I got short notice to come to Hackball's Cross. So Hackball's Cross was a rural area, really. And when I came, the strength of Hackball's Cross was one sergeant and 3 Gardaí. The next day, the strength of the station increased to 5 sergeants and 21 Gardaí. So Hackball's Cross was a 24-hour station. Dramad was a 24-hour station. And Omead and Dundalk were 24-hour stations. So there was massive patrolling on the border from Omead back to Drumboat in the Louth border there.
When you say a patrol, like how many people would be in a patrol or how many cars would be in a patrol?
Well, there'd be normally one guard patrol car and 2 Gardaí and maybe a sergeant, and they'd be assisted by the Irish Army on the checkpoints.
Right.
24-hour checkpoints. You must remember that this was shortly after the 13 people killed in Derry on Bloody Sunday. And as a matter of fact, Dundalk came to a standstill. It was a day of mourning in Dundalk after Bloody Sunday. So things were a bit hectic on the border at the time, really. There was a lot of temporary members arriving from various places on the border, really.
And where were they being put up? Were they being put up in guest houses?
Put up in guest houses all around the place, really. So guest houses done fairly well.
So you had people coming, say, from Galway, Mayo, Kerry, Cork?
Kerry, Mayo and Cork.
And how long would they be stationed at the Drumad?
They'd stay normally a month or maybe 2 months. It depends whether they were married or single.
Right. Could you describe then, say, a typical shift? How long would you be working before you got off again?
Typical shift would be 8 hours, really, and they'd be relieved. The shifts would be 6 to 2, 2 to 10 and 10 to 6. And they'd be relieved by another shift. So it'll be holding checkpoints at the various places around the border.
Whereabouts were the main checkpoints?
Now, if you start in Omead, you had Ferry Hill, also known as Flagstaff. That's at Davies Pub on the Omead to Newry Road. Then you had Eton Tubber. There's an annual commemoration to Republican graves where 5 men died in an explosion in November 1957. So the Republicans commemorate there every year. At Eton Tubber.
Was that a kind of a back road that avoided the main road?
It can lead up to the mountain in Omead. You had Carrigarnon on the main road. This was on the border, this checkpoint, really. And the customs were near hand too, really. But there'd be massive traffic in both directions, really.
Right.
So that was a busy one.
And can I ask you then why the British Army didn't have a checkpoint on the border as well? They had theirs on the way into Newry.
Well, they did have it at Killeen, maybe. And the Bearm, although it was a very heavy one, as you went into Newry there, at Killeen. To be held up for hours.
But they didn't have it closer to the border than that?
No. So you must remember the border is very near hand across Midlen. And the British Army and RUC did not normally patrol in cars. They flew in by helicopter to cross Midlen. So there's another checkpoint at Kilnasagut Bridge. This is the place that the two RUC officers were killed, Buchanan and Breen. You remember that? They were after coming from the Dundalk Garda Station. And they were shot dead as they entered the north at the bridge. Now, you had another checkpoint at Carrickastickin. That's out near Fawhard. That's up to Murphy's there, Carrickastickin. At Courtban, checkpoint at Drumboat and Magoney. That's on the Loud Monaghan border. And you had also a checkpoint at Sheila Cross near the Concession Road. That's the main Dundalk to Castlebaney Road. Ballybinnipe Cross, Sky Hill, Carrick Edmund. That was Boyle's shop. There was also a checkpoint there. The border just came in there, really. People, you have to realise that the border is only a line. And you had to go by a map. And if there was ever a court case, the Ordnance Survey had to be called to prove the border.
And were you ever in court at one of these court cases?
Yeah, especially if the customs were taking cases, they get the Ordnance Survey to prove that the person was in the north or so. It was in the south. If there'd be no good if they're in the north.
And was it difficult to prove that, though?
It was hard enough. The Ordnance Survey map would prove the line, really. Yeah.
One of your guests, Sean McGuinness, the bus driver, mentioned that there was a group in Dundalk when he was driving through and he thought they were going to hijack his bus.
Oh, yeah. There was an attack on the Garda station in Dundalk in 1972. And the local sergeant at the time was Hugh Sreenan and his wife and children. And they were trapped in the station. Hugh Sreenan eventually went on to be assistant commissioner. He's dead now, Lord have mercy on him, really. But it was terrifying. And there was a couple of guards in the station, and only for the army arrived with their tanks to disperse. No one knows what would happen. It was one of these meetings at the square, and somebody decided to march toward the station. I think it was something about treatment of prisoners in Portlaoise or something like that.
Now, when you say meetings at the square, would they be on a Saturday or a Sunday,
normally on a Saturday, really. And they were fairly large, the meetings. It depended, they were reacting to things in the north. It depended what happened in the north, really. So it's some big disaster. They get bigger and bigger, these meetings.
Tom, during the 1970s and going on into the 1980s, did things quieten down in Dundalk?
No, they got worse. The Dundalk area during this period went through a very difficult time. We had the Crow Street bombing of the 19th of December 1975, when Huey Waters and Jack Rooney lost their lives in the Lyleless bombing. Business in the town also suffered greatly, and nearly every Saturday you had a march at the square. So this was very bad for business. You also had black flag parades and things like that. So business really was at a standstill.
Yeah. Were you on duty when the word came through about the bombing at Kay's Tavern?
As a matter of fact, I was passing with my wife and children, passing up the main street when we heard the bang. I intended to turn left. I was just lucky. Didn't turn left into Crow Street when we heard the bang. And every car stopped, which was dangerous to do, and look to see what's going on instead of moving on. Like I was going on into Errol Street, but my wife said, we'll not go this way. So it was a bit of luck.
And did the Gardaí expect something like this to happen? Or were they taken totally unawares?
Taken totally unawares, really. No one has ever been prosecuted for this.
But like, I always thought that Dundalk got off lightly because, you know, you look at some of the other towns and cities beside us in the north, and they were bombed to shreds. To my mind, I'd wonder why there weren't subsequent bombs. I mean, if they could put a bomb in the centre of town beside the courthouse, why were there no subsequent follow-up bombings of Dundalk?
Yeah, I suppose you could say they were lucky, but there was a very heavy security presence in Dundalk, really. You had a bomb in Belturbet, hadn't you? You had a bomb in Monaghan, bombs in Dublin and things like that. No one knew where the bomb was going to come next, really.
Can you tell me some of the other major policing incidents in Dundalk during this time, so?
Yeah, there was a number of them. On the 25th of the 8th, 1979, Dundalk played Linfield at Oriel Park in the 1979 European Cup. Riots took place in the town, and Linfield supporters marched from their buses at the Harp to carry in the Union Jack. So they got onto the roofs in Oriel Park, and they got up on the flagpoles and things like that. So there was a riot, really, in the town. Windows were broken, and the buses had to be escorted back to the border. And there was over 300 guards on duty, and there was 100 people injured, including a number of Gardaí.
What kind of preparation would have been made with the RUC at that time for bringing the buses into Dundalk across the border?
There wouldn't be a whole lot of preparation, really. Like the Linfield advised the supporters, really, to not cause trouble, and Oriel Park done the same. But, of course, that didn't stop the trouble that started. Linfield was fined heavily, and Oriel Park was also fined for not having enough security.
Right. And the second match then wasn't played in Belfast, it was played in Holland, as far as I understand.
Out of the country anyway, really.
Yeah. You were in Oriel Park itself?
I was in Oriel Park at the time.
Whereabouts in Oriel Park were you stationed?
I was stationed at the main entrance. And I recall one particular incident. This particular shopkeeper came up to me and gave out. He says, "The guards got no one for breaking my window. If I was living on the Dublin Road," he says, "you'd be up like a shot." So myself and three more guards went down to the train and retrieved three fellas from the train. And I asked this fellow to come down to identify, and he wouldn't.
So that was the Linfield fans that were in town for a few hours, and the windows smashed.
Bus smashed, and Yes, it had to be escorted back and back across the border, really. There was a big crowd at the match, really. But nobody thought, I suppose the security was taken unawares. We didn't think there'd be such riots, really. But when they saw the Union Jacks and these people marching and things like that, that got the locals going too.
And some of the supporters were arrested. Were they taken down to the Crescent, and what would happen to them there?
Well, they'd be charged and released on bail, really. So some of them came back and others didn't, really, before the courts.
And was there any other major security issues in Dundalk?
Yeah. There was a very heavy security presence on the border at Carrigarnon, on the main Dundalk to Newry Road, that's the old road. On the 18th of the 3rd, 1984, when Dominic McGlinchey, INLA, was extradited to Northern Ireland, it was one of the first extraditions for Republican offences.
And were you part of the patrol?
I was out there on the border.
And can you describe what happened?
Well, it was a very heavy security, and a number of people were gathering, really, and the guards handed them over to the RUC officers. And
just on the border?
On the border.
Whereabouts?
Just on the line. Just on the line. Bobby Sands died in hunger strike in the north, so that created an awful lot of tension in the border area, really.
And there was big support for Bobby Sands and for the IRA in Dundalk.
In a border town, you'd always get a certain amount of support in marches. But the general people support law and order, really. In general, the bulk of the people support law and order. Because they have to keep the thing going, really. Why you'd have anarchy in the town.
So we'll take a break for a song, Tom. Do you have a favourite song for
Yeah. One of my favourite songs would be Come Back, Paddy Riley, to Valley James Duff by Louise Morrissey.
Just turn to the left at the bridge of the Nay and stop when halfway to Coot Hill. It's there you'll find it, I know sure enough, when fortune has come.
I was working in the Hotel Imperial in the kitchen, actually, when there was a bomb scare in the Hotel Imperial, and it was because Peter Robinson was coming down to appear in Dundalk. Were you involved in patrolling that one?
Yeah, I was. In January 1986, Peter Robinson led a group of over 100 loyalists to the village of Dunturbat in County Monaghan. a scene occurred and Robinson was arrested. He was eventually brought before Dundalk District Court in August 1986. There was a very heavy security presence at the court. And Ian Paisley and a gentleman called McCrae and many supporters came to support him. And there was windows broken in Dundalk in various pubs, and there was kind of a mini riot. And his case, he was remanded to the Special Criminal Court anyway. But they complained that the state didn't give them enough of protection. In other words, that the supporters were assaulted. Things like that. Eventually, he appeared at the Special Criminal Court on the 17th of 1st, 1987, and he was fined £17,500.
And were you in court that day?
I was. I was in court, really, sitting beside, minding Ian Paisley. Ian Paisley was very thankful for the support.
Did he shake your hand?
Oh, shake his hand, yeah. Shake the hands. And Peter Robinson, yeah.
And do you have any other major incidents you can tell us about?
Yeah. Another major security operation was in March 1998, when the bodies of Provisional IRA members who were killed by the SAS in Gibraltar passed through the town on its way for burial in Belfast. So that was a very heavy security presence. But luckily enough, there was no trouble at that, really.
Mm-hmm. And were the guards always able to cope with these situations, or were they caught out sometimes?
The guards were able to cope in general during this turbulent period. The force of law and order were always able to hold the line. Of course, the Gardaí and the checkpoints were ably assisted by the army from Aiken's barracks. So the guards were all have to pay tribute to the army for the assistance. So there was an army from all over the country brought in to support the presence in Aiken's barracks, really. The Gardaí could always rely on the vast majority of the population in the area for support.
So did things in Dundalk settle down and improve after the Good Friday Agreement and the ceasefire?
Yes. The security situation greatly eased. As a matter of fact, it was non-existent, really. So it was easy crossing in the border. Customs posts had been removed. All the security checkpoints had been removed. The lookout post at Drumacca Wall near Cross Midlane had been removed. So people found it very easy to cross the border and to trade again. And the people were happy with this. So anyone who could come into the border, really, you wouldn't recognise the border. The only way you recognise the border is the road markings and the speed limits. It's a different, it's miles in the north and kilometres here.
Yeah, well, people have a lot of, I suppose, memories of going up north, going up to Newry. I remember I used to go up on the bus from Knockbridge. We used to go up to the swimming pool in Newry.
Yeah.
And the British police here, you see, would get on and they'd walk up and down and look at you. And, you know, you're afraid of them. You wouldn't want to say a word because, you know, they could hold the bus up, they could take it all out.
Yeah.
There was that kind of...
There's a lot of tension, really, across the border.
Authority figures there, yeah.
Because you didn't know what to expect. Especially when you're held up in Killeen by the snow. You could be held up for a half an hour, going through, taking photographs and things like that.
Or even going up to Belfast International Airport when you're trying to get an airplane.
Yeah.
And the next thing, can you pull over there, sir?
That's right.
And it might take 20, 25 right. minutes looking through your luggage.
And it's so relaxed now, it is.
And was it easy to switch off from the job? Like, did you have any hobbies to take your mind off it?
Fishing and walking and cycling, really. You can switch off, really. Like, it's only a job at the end of the day, really. And you have to do it to the best of your ability. And when you retire, you forget about it.
Well, you haven't. You're after making a radio documentary.
Yeah, but you forget about the job, really.
The day-to-day worries, like, of the job.
Yeah.
It must have been tough in the family at sometimes. You know, your wife would be worried about what she's seen on the television, and there's no word from you. You're out for a while.
Well, that's a feature, of course, the Gareth family. You never know what you come across, really. Even in an ordinary checkpoint, you could get hit with a car, a drunken driver or anything like that. There's an element of danger, really, stopping vehicles all the time, really. And when you're near the border, some people won't stop. They will now, in fairness. But over that period, some people wouldn't stop.
Would they not?
No.
They'd keep going?
Keep going.
Right.
And then...
You'd have to jump out of the way?
Or jump out of the way. Yeah.
They'd rev up the car.
It couldn't happen. Yeah. It couldn't happen that often. But it happened. Really. So if a person wants to get away, they'll do anything, really, to get away, really.
Mm-hmm.
But the people are very law-abiding around, the majority of the people, really, I've found. But you learn to live with it, really. Like, I suppose when you list, as the old saying, when you list, you must soldier, really. It's part and parcel of the job.
So when you arrived up here from Longford, did it take you long to settle in? Or were you homesick, or were you just so busy that you didn't have time to think?
I was married for 2 years. We had a baby of 8 months. So it was difficult for my wife and family to have to move up to Dundalk, because we were established in Longford at the time, and we had to move up. So I'm here since. Apart from a stint in Ballyconnell, I got promoted superintendent and I was sent to Ballyconnell, and I ended up in Bailey, where I retired some years ago. So we're living happily here in the dark since.
And there's a huge amount of people from all over the country who've moved here, either because of the guards or the customs or teachers or administration.
It's a fine town, really, and there's a fine college here, and there's all the facilities here. The border is deeply symbolic and politically significant. But for those who live or have lived near the political boundary, it is a matter of ordinary efforts of dealing with its practical presence in everyday life. This became more difficult during the period of the Troubles from early 1970s to mid-1990s, when crossing the border meant being subject to both customs and army police checkpoints. Parliamentary violence was at its height, and there was casualties on all sides. Border crossing points were increased, unapproved roads were blocked, and watchtowers were erected. However, daily life for the border people had to go on. As this is the final programme in this series, I'd like to thank all the participants: Pat McCourt, John McGuinness, Joseph Mulligan, the late Joe Quinn, Mona Daly, Leonard Hattrick, Brendan Cotlin. And I'd also like to thank the late Michael Torrington from Carlingford, who also contributed to this programme. I'd like to thank Alan Burden, manager of Dundalk FM, who produced the programme, and also Alan Bogan, who recorded and edited the stories. And I'd also like to thank the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland for facilitating this programme, and to Dundalk FM for broadcasting the programme. I hope you all enjoyed it.
This programme was funded with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.